It's a classic story from Michelle Silverstein called The Giving Tree. Many of you may have read that in school. And there's so many different takeaways from that, but it's amazing story of how it went from this very simplistic relationship, very pure relationship of being able to just kind of go and have fun and enjoy each other to this relationship that started to change when kind of money came into this and the desire for more things and how the boy was never satisfied. He went from needing the money to needing the house to needing the boat, and none of those things ever really made him happy. It's this cycle that maybe many of us can relate to.
Yeah, you know, we live in the wealthiest country in the world, literally. And what's fascinating about this is that we, in an ongoing basis, have this longing for more. Regardless of how much we have, there's always this sense that we need more. And so, you know, as we start the consume journey today, we're going to be on this six-week journey where we're going to kind of be looking at our appetites and some of the things that cause us to always be looking for that thing after the latest buzz wears off. Because there's actually freedom that we can find in this cycle. And so we're really excited you're here this morning. My name's Kurt Walters, by the way. I'm the lead pastor here at Cross Point.
I'm Eric. I'm the connections director here at Cross Point. If I can ever help you get plugged in, say through a volunteering role, I'd love to be able to do that. When you walked in today, you should have received a number of different things. This weekly, this consume journal, this journey guide. If you didn't get one of these, make sure you grab one on your way out today. And also, you may have had a Polaroid picture taken of you on your way in today.
Yeah, I got one too.
So hold on to this. Kurt's going to refer to this a little bit later on. PJ, I thought we should have done the Outkast song, Shake It Like a Polaroid Picture. Yeah. That would have been, something.
One of my all-time favorite songs. Honest to goodness,
all right.
Not lying.
Well, you missed your opportunity today.
Yeah.
In that weekly, you're going to have something called a connection card. If you could grab that and take that out. If you filled out one of these cards in the past, you kind of know what to do. Put your name on here. If any information has changed recently, please update this card. If you're a guest with us this morning, you're here for a very exciting week as we kick off this great series that we're really excited about. If you could fill out this card too, put as much information on here as you feel comfortable sharing with us. We really would appreciate that. We're going to refer to this card again throughout the course of the service. At the end, we're going to ask that you take it and you drop it in this thing called the Joy Box. You'll find those just outside of the doors or beside the doors as you exit today. You can drop that in there along with any financial gifts, tithes, offerings to CrossPoint. If you'd rather give online, you can at our website, crosspointweb.org. Now, as you fill out that card, we want to tell you about a number of things coming up here at CrossPoint. Actually, going back last weekend, we celebrated the halfway point, halftime of this thing called the Launch Campaign. The Launch Campaign is this journey that we embarked on 18 months ago, really to fund and fuel this place, this launch pad, to build this building, to launch this launch pad. And in your weekly, you'll find this Launch Campaign card.
Yeah, there's a card in here that we looked at last weekend. And if you were not with us last weekend, you know, it was the halfway point, as Eric said. And there are really two things that we asked you to do with this card. If you were a part of the Launch Campaign, if you made a previous commitment to the Launch Campaign at the halfway point, it would be very helpful for us to know if you plan to fulfill that commitment. And if you do plan to fulfill your original commitment, then you can mark the box under previous commitments. If you're sitting there thinking, man, I made this commitment, and God has just been good to me, and I feel like I'm actually able to give more, then you can increase your commitment to the Launch Campaign for the back half of the campaign, and you can mark the second box on here. Or maybe some of us made a commitment, a faith commitment, and life has happened, life has changed, maybe your financial situation has changed, and you're just thinking, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to fulfill this. And if that's where you are, then we want you to be able to adjust your commitment as well. There's grace here. And so, you know, because the key is we want everyone to be a part of this in whatever way they're able to do. And so if you can let us know that and then turn this in at the end of the service, and then also if you're newer to CrossPoint, if you've, say, been with us less than 18 months, then maybe you're not familiar with the Launch Campaign, and there's still a unique opportunity for you to get in and say, you know, I was a part of funding the CrossPoint Launch Pad, putting this facility in the community that's going to change the trajectory of lives for years to come. And so, you know, you can still be a part of this. You can, you know, identify and say, hey, I'm going to give $20 a month or $100 a month or, you know, whatever that might be for you. And you can still uniquely be a part of the back end of helping us finish strong in this three-year campaign. And so if you didn't have a chance to fill these out last weekend, you can do that, and then you can place them in the Joy Box. It never gets old, does it?
No, it doesn't.
You get to do it all the time. I don't do it very often. But, you know, you can place them in the boxes when you leave this morning with the rest of your cards.
Kurt mentioned that this facility is really here for the community, and that's going to be a play later today in our church parking lot here, the Cross Point parking lot, the Kiwanis Club of Geist is going to be hosting a trunk or treat this afternoon from 4 to 7. If you're not familiar with the trunk or treat, it's an opportunity for your kids to come and meet people in their cars and get candy from them.
It's the only time it's actually okay.
That sounds really creepy.
Take candy from your strangers.
All right, it's actually very safe. We should put that out there. Cars are going to be lined up. They can kind of do some trick-or-treating, essentially, in the parking lot where they can come and they get candy. It's absolutely free, and everybody's been vetted, so it's absolutely safe as well. So come later today. Might be an opportunity for you and your family to try out your Halloween costumes early, kind of get into the swing of the season, I guess. I don't know. But there's going to be hot chocolate and crafts. It's absolutely free, so come on by later today from 4 to 7 for Trunk or Treat. We're really excited about today as we kick off this all-church journey called Consumes. We're going to be diving into this over the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, and you know, as we dive into this, there's a rhythm to a journey. So if you're newer to Crosspoint, again, in the last 11 months or so, you've not been on a journey with us. And so we're going to kind of walk you through what's going to take place over the next 6 weeks and how you can engage in it to receive maximum impact of what we believe God wants to do in all of our lives.
And who better to talk about rhythm than a couple of middle-aged white guys, yeah, right? Am I right? So here's how this rhythm works. One is, hey, you've accomplished it. You are here on a Sunday morning. That's the first part of this rhythm. Be here on a Sunday morning as we kick off the topic that we're going to be diving into for the next week. Also, in your journal guide, there is homework, kind of homework for you to do. We encourage you to look at it. Your first thing to do is the one that says week one. We do the week one homework. And then, yes, exactly. This is the first week of it, so you do week one. Not week six.
Got it.
Unless you're an overachiever. But you'll be confused. So do week one, and with each week, there's something called a consume challenge that you also dive into as well.
Yeah, and so you want to turn to like page 14, and this week, after the weekend service, you know, diving into this homework, it's one of those things, like when you're in school, just looking at the textbook doesn't, you know, work. You know, you actually have to dive in, you have to do the heavy lifting, and so in order for us to get the maximum impact, the maximum growth we believe God wants to do among us, you know, dive into page 14 this week, and you know, make sure you do this before you get to your journey groups. I mean, some of the things you're going to do in your journey groups are actually going to come out of the challenge and the homework that we do during the week.
Yeah, and the small group experience that Kurt just referenced really is the third part of this rhythm, and really we feel like is one, the most important thing of this most important thing that we do here at Crosspoint. So if you've yet to get into a small group, it's just 6 weeks, and then you can jump out of it if you don't want to. But here's the thing. You have an opportunity to get into one of those today because we feel like through the small group experience, you're really going to be encouraged by it. It's kind of like working with somebody when you work out, that person that can kind of push you, challenge you, encourage you along the way.
Yeah, and you know, every now and then somebody will come up to me and they'll say something like, well, you know, Kurt, I really want to grow. I want to kind of grow to the next point in my spiritual journey. Listen, if that's where you are, you're not going to experience the growth that you want unless you're in a group. All right, people who want to grow get into groups. We get out of rows, we get into circles, and you might be thinking, I'm not a small group person. Listen, anybody can do it for 6 weeks, right? I mean, 6 weeks, you may not even like the people you're in a group with. It's only 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of 6 weeks, you actually have an opt-out. You can decide, no questions asked, if you want to continue there or not. Now, you know, one of the things I love about Crosspoint is we're an engaged community, and we're all about engagement, and we're a last-minute community. And so some of you might be thinking, man, I'm the loser that hasn't mm-hmm. signed up for a small group yet. I'm a slacker. Listen, it's not a problem. There are still plenty of spots in the lobby. You can see the tables when you walk out. Make sure you stop by there before you leave today and get into a group. That's one of the ways to sign up. There's also an additional way as well.
That's right. So if you feel like you, hey, I'm a loser. There's other losers amongst you.
There's a lot of losers here.
There's a lot of losers here today. You can join a group with some other losers. My wife and I host a group. PJ hosts a group. And so out in the back in the commons area, there is a table where you can see all the different groups, all the different days of the week that you can sign up for. Maybe you see some familiar faces and think, oh, I'd like to be in a group with them. You can go ahead and do that too. Plenty of space is still available. So before you leave today, swing by that table, check out some of the groups and sign up for one. If that's not your thing or you're not sure about it, you can also use this QR code that you'll see all over Crosspoint. You can scan that, and you can look at all the groups on your phone, or you can go to our website, too, crosspointweb.org.
Here's the cool thing. You can go pee in the urinals in the bathroom, and you can sign up for a group while you're there.
That's the cool thing.
That's how cool this is. So now here's
That's
here's the other thing. So we have some unique groups. If you're a student, 7th to 12th grade, we have groups for you. So, you know, at CSM, during the next 6 weeks, you're going to meet every Monday evening, and you're going to break into small groups, junior high boys and girls, senior high guy, guys and gals. And so make sure, students, you sign up for a group. If you are looking for a men's group or a women's group, we have a blended families mm-hmm. group for families that, you know, have blended and are looking to connect with other blended families. So a lot of opportunities, you know, to get involved. And just hear us say, you know, if you want to grow, you got to get in a group, all right? We're not going to twist your arm on too many things. Get in a group mm-hmm. is one of those things during the journey.
Yeah. Well, we've got a great service plan for you today. We're so glad that you're with us as we kicked off this journey, this consume journey. Throughout the course of these next 6 weeks, we're going to bring a lot of different videos your way. Some that will make you think. Some that will make you laugh. Also, great music, because that's what we love to do here at Cross Point. So to get us going, we're going to take you back to 1997. I know like PJ likes it when I get into my DJ mode. Yes. Back to 1997. A little song from The Verve, not The Verve Pipe, who was also back in 97.
True.
The Verve.
The Verve.
And they had this song that really speaks into the tension that many of us feel, this kind of going through the daily grind of trying to earn money but really not getting to where we want to go with that money. It's kind of this vicious cycle. And for the band The Verve, the irony of this song kind of ties into what it's all about, because it's called Bittersweet Symphony. They wrote this song, the biggest song of their career.
It's the only song anyone knows.
Any song from them. And they got sued by the Rolling Stones because they said they sampled too much of their original thoughts and sound of the song. And so it was the biggest hit.
75 cents on every dollar that was made went back to Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
So it was a bittersweet symphony for them.
It was a very bittersweet symphony. It ties into what we're talking about. It's the Verve. A Verve, not Verb. Verve, Bittersweet Symphony.
Yeah, all right, awesome. Yes, Bittersweet Symphony. You know, those lines right there, I'm a slave to my money, and then what? I die. All right, that's what we're going to be talking about throughout the course of this journey. In fact, as we said a few minutes ago, if this is your first weekend with us to Cross Point, man, we just want to welcome you this morning because, you know, we believe there's really some cool stuff that's going to happen. There always is when we start these six-week journeys. And let me tell you a little bit about why we're doing this today. You know, in our culture, every single day, there is a stream of information that heads your way, and you have to decipher through it, and it's constantly telling you that you need this, that in order to be satisfied, you have to buy this, you need more. If you have the red sweater, you need the blue one. You know, there's this constant stream of whatever I have isn't enough, and so I have to attain this or that in order to be satisfied. And yet we're burdened with debt. And yet we have this ongoing sense that even if we have a savings account, we're burdened with the reality that, oh man, I need more in my savings. We're burdened with this sense of, man, whatever I have, it's not enough, and so I need to get the next version. And what we discover is that we're in bondage. And you know, if we think about this and we think about what that means for all of our individual lives, I just wanted to think about what would it look like if every single one of us in this room could actually experience freedom from this? If we could actually get free from the weight of needing the next thing. And you know, I believe that's one of the things that God wants to do in us. What would it look like to have a lifelong posture of generosity? You know, I was looking at some statistics just over this last week, and it was very fascinating. In fact, I ran across one that said that nearly as many students will graduate from college in this upcoming year as there will be people who file for bankruptcy. Over a million students will graduate college this year. Over a million individuals will file for personal bankruptcy. And then went on to say, one of the reasons for this is because you and I, the average American public, actually spends $1.33 for every dollar that we earn. So we're, on average, spending a third more than the amount of money that we actually take in or receive. And maybe that's not it for you. Maybe it's not overspending. Maybe for you, it's over-fixating on your savings. Maybe it's over-fixating on your financial portfolio. You know, maybe you're like, man, I don't spend anything, but I'm always hoarding. I'm always fixating on, I don't have enough around me. I've got this amount of money, but I need this. You know, what kind of raise am I going to get this year? I mean, you know, and either way we fall on this, we find ourselves in a place where we are in bondage, and I believe God wants us to experience freedom. God, I am praying right now that you would help us to see things over these next 6 weeks that maybe we have never seen before. God, I pray that you'd help us, most importantly, to see you, and as we start this journey today, that we would do it in a way that's healthy, and God, in a way that gets us to a great finish line. I just pray that you use my words, in fact, use everything that happens in this room over these next few minutes to move us toward that end. I pray these things in your name. Amen.
Oh, I just can't get these numbers to add up.
It's like we're never going to get out of this hole.
Credit card debt, does it ever end?
Maybe I can help. We sure could use it.
We've tried debt consolidation companies.
We've even taken out loans to help make payments.
Well, you're not the only ones. Did you know millions of Americans live with debt they cannot control? That's why I developed this unique new program for managing your debt. It's called Don't Buy Stuff You Cannot Afford.
Oh, let me see that. If you don't have any money, you should not buy anything. Sounds interesting.
Sounds confusing.
I don't know, honey. This makes a lot of sense. There's a whole section here on how to buy expensive things using money you save.
Give me that. And where would you get this saved money?
I tell you where and how in chapter 3.
Okay, but what if I want something but I don't have any money?
You don't buy it.
Well, let's say I don't have enough money to buy something. Should I buy it anyway?
No.
Now I'm really confused.
It's a little confusing at first.
Well, what if you have the money? Can you buy something?
Yes.
Now take the money away. Same story?
Nope. You shouldn't buy stuff when you don't have the money.
I think I got it. I buy something I want and then hope that I can pay for it, right?
No. You make sure you have money, then you buy it.
Oh, then you buy it. But shouldn't you buy it before you have the money?
No.
Why not?
It's in the book. It's only one page long. The advice is priceless, and the book is free.
Wow, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, we can put it on our credit card.
So get out of debt now. Write for your free copy of Don't Buy Stuff You Cannot Afford. And if you order now, you'll also receive Seriously, If You Don't Have the Money, Don't Buy It, along with a 12-month subscription to Stop Buying Stuff magazine. So order today.
Oh my, you know what I want for us throughout this journey over the next 6 weeks is I want us to experience freedom. And you know, there's two kinds of people in this room this morning, and some of us, as we were sitting watching that, some of us weren't laughing very much because that scene right there hits quite too close to home for us. I mean, it's a very familiar scene for us. And listen, if you're already feeling a bit of shame, you're feeling like, oh man, yeah, that's me. Listen, I just want you to know the journey is not about shame. All right, we're not about shame. We're actually about helping you get to a place of freedom. Then there's others of us who are sitting here this morning like, man, I got that nailed. I got my stuff together. That's not me. Thank God I don't overspend like everybody else does. But you know, for you, you probably are dealing with issues of maybe fixating again on your savings or fixating on your financial portfolio or fixating on the next job or how am I going to get more money faster and chasing after the American dream at the next level, and we just continue to up the ante. And the reality is both of these things actually land us in a place where we are in spiritual and emotional and financial bondage. And so three things I want us to look at today. Three things. First one is this. You and I were created to consume and to be consumed. All right, we're created to consume and to be consumed. See, this journey we're going on isn't about not consuming. All right, so you and I were actually created to consume. We're created to also be consumed. The question is, by what, how much, and how does that all fit into my life? Now, think about this as people. Think about us. You and I, we were actually created by God to actually need things like food, to consume food. God created us to want food. God created us, you know, all kinds of food with textures and flavors and, you know, all kinds of. God created us to consume food to sustain our lives. At the same time, unless you live in the tropics somewhere, God created you to need clothes. All right, I mean, so you consume clothing. I mean, it's a normal thing to consume clothing. And yet, here's what's interesting. In fact, I don't know if anybody reading The Omnivore's Dilemma by chance? Came across some interesting material, an exciting book? No, nobody right now? Okay. Well, let me tell you about it. So The Omnivore's Dilemma is very fascinating because the whole point of the book is this idea that you and I, as human beings, are the only created beings that are omnivores. See, every other created being is either a carnivore or a herbivore, right? An herbivore, right? Is that what it's called? Not a plantivore, an herbivore, yeah. So, you know, it's very simple for an herbivore. They see a plant and they eat it. In fact, the koala bear eats one leaf their entire life, one leaf from the eucalyptus tree. That's the only thing they'll eat. Carnivores see a piece of meat or a live animal, they kill it, they eat it. See, you and I, we're actually created to consume all of this. You and I can come up with concoctions that the rest of created beings are not able to come up with. Things like, you know, we can take like a cow and ground its beef and put it in a big pot along with some tomatoes and beans and, you know, some herbs. And what do we have? We have chili, right? I mean, our creativity, who thought of the idea of taking a pita and putting, like, you know, scrambled eggs inside it with some sausage bits and throwing it in the microwave the way God intended, and all of a sudden in a minute, 15 seconds, you have a pita pocket, right? God bless America for lean pockets, exactly the way God intended it to be. See, these things just show us that we actually have the creativity to create things that we can consume, and God actually created us to consume things. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what is it ultimately that I want to consume? All right, do I want to consume God, or do I want to consume things? All right, and the more things that we consume, the more things that we consume that are physical, the more of a tendency we have to fuel things or to fill needs that are not to be filled with those things. The more we consume of things, the more tendency we have to replace a desire for God. Ecclesiastes 5 puts it this way. This writer of wisdom says, as goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? And so this writer of wisdom says, hey, we keep getting more, and when we get more, you know what happens? We actually want more. It says right here that we kind of develop this voracious appetite, and we very, very rarely actually feel satisfied once we buy something. I mean, how many of us, you know, 10 years ago, if somebody would have told you 10 years ago how much money you'd be making today, you know what most of us would have said? We've been like, holy cow, I'm going to make that kind of money? Man, if I had that kind of money right now, I would never need another dollar ever in my life. And yet, you know what happens? You consume that paycheck, right? You know more than like start receiving that paycheck, and you consume it. All of a sudden, you're like, man, I think it's time for another raise. I mean, I wonder if they're noticing I need another raise. And why does this happen? It's because we have this constant feed, this constant, you know, flow of information coming to us in media and in print and on television that says you need this. You know, if you have this, then now you need this. Or, you know, you need the new improved version in order to feel a sense of satisfaction and have the buzz that you used to feel. You know, even when we ride on a plane, have you noticed that? Julie and I were like flying home from a short little vacation a few months ago, and I just sat down in the seat, and I'm like, I'm just going to like power down. You know, I couldn't, my iPad was kind of packed away, so I'm just going to sit here and have some downtime, and I couldn't fall asleep, so I reached into the pocket in front of me. You know what I pulled out? Sky Mall magazine. Anybody ever seen this? Sky Mall, yeah. I mean, really fascinating, right? A lot of cool stuff in there, and kind of humorous as well. Take a look at a few things in there. Here was one image. Power up all your devices with this one-of-a-kind paper towel dispenser, all right? It's just what I need, a paper towel dispenser that will power my iPhone, all right? I mean, it's not enough. Why can't we just have a paper towel dispenser that's a paper towel dispenser? No, I mean, that's not enough. We got to, like, put all these wires in it so it can power all of my devices, and then we're going to convince people that they need to have this in their home, right? How about this one? Pedal your way to better health. I bet somebody bought that thing right there and used it for 3 years every single day, right? I mean, I know that's what happened, because, I mean, we see things like this and all these exercise contraptions, and we're thinking, man, if I buy this, this is going to help me drop those last 20 pounds I've been working on for the last year, right? I mean, my goodness, how much stuff do we have in our basements right now? How many contraptions do we have that we've bought and we've confused? See, we get confused. We think if I buy it, then I'll use it, right? I mean, we get that confused. And so here's an idea. Push-ups, right? Push-ups, no contraptions. No, I need this device. So we buy it. We consume it. Oh, this is an interesting one right here. All right, so Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings. Guys, let me tell you something. If you buy this stuff right here, you are a dork, all right? I mean, if you buy this, you are a major loser, all right? I mean, if you end up with the precious pendant around your neck, let me tell you what, you will never feel a woman again in your life. I am guaranteeing you, that's just something you'll never experience. Hi, my name is Gandalf, and I wear a precious pun. I don't know, what's his name? Gandalf, whatever his name was. I mean, we see these things like, oh, I need this. I need to consume this. This will make my life so much better. And then what happens? It's not, it's just the same. It's just the same. The psalmist, writer of the Psalms, here's what he says. He says, my soul is consumed with longing for your laws at all times. What he's saying is, instead of buying stuff, what would it look like if we say, God, I just want to consume you? What if he said, all the ways you think I ought to live, God, all the things you think life ought to work, I want to be consumed by those things in my life. You know, one of the stories of consumption that we see in the Bible comes to us out of the book of Exodus. And this is an interesting passage. It's where the nation of Israel is actually on a journey out of slavery into freedom, a very similar journey to what you and I are going to be on over the next 6 weeks. Ours is a little bit shorter. Theirs was like 40 years. Ours is 6 weeks. But some of the principles are the same. And it's interesting because when they left Egypt, when Charlton Heston led them out of Egypt, or Moses, however you like to see him as, you know, when they led the Israelites out of Egypt to this place called the Promised Land, when right before they get there, Moses goes up into the mountain and connects with God. He spends some time, and God begins to give to Moses kind of the new ways to live, the new laws, the new decrees. See, in essence, these slaves didn't know how to live free. And so basically, God's building a new DNA into this entire culture. And so Moses is up there writing, you know, all of these things down. And while he's up there, you know, the people that he'd led out of Egypt, like hundreds of thousands of people, are down at the bottom of the mountain. And you know what? They're getting a little antsy. They're getting a little, you know, bored. You know what happens when we get bored? You know what happens when you get bored? You go shopping. you know, have you ever noticed that? You know what happens when you feel depressed? What do? You go shopping, right? Have you ever noticed when something's missing in my life, I just feel like, man, there's something more that I need. What do? You go shopping. I mean, somehow shopping is always the right answer when I need a little soothing. And so in this case, here in Exodus, we see that Moses is up in the mountain. He's getting the instructions from God. He's writing them down. The people back on the ground, you know, at the bottom of the mountain are getting antsy. And so while Moses, they're kind of like, well, where's Moses? I mean, Moses led us here. What happened? Where's God, by the way? I mean, we haven't felt God for a while. And so they get antsy. You know what they start doing? They actually begin to create their own God. They take all of their possessions and they put them together and they actually create a physical God. In fact, here's what it says in Exodus 32. It says, so all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. See, Aaron was Moses' understudy, kind of like his apprentice. He took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, these are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. I mean, so all of a sudden, they're now saying this calf, this physical thing they created with their gold, is now their God. I mean, this real God is a calf. I mean, they've totally lost sight of the fact that it was actually the God of the universe, the God of creation, that brought them out of Egypt. And it's so strange to us. I mean, we read this thing, and we're like, man, why in the world would they look to an object for their satisfaction? And yet, you and I do it every single day. Every single day, we see things like, oh, man, I just need this, and then I'll be a little happier. Or, man, if I just had that. And it's strange. It's very strange. See, this is what money does to us. All right? Money does bring a level of freedom to us. Tell you what, if you're cash poor right now, all right, and you know what I'm talking about. If you're cash poor, when your car breaks down, you know, you're like on pins and needles for like 24 hours till you hear from the mechanic. Because you're on pins and needles because you're like, man, I hope it's not more than $100 because that's all I've got left on my credit card. And listen, I've been there. I remember those days, all right? And it's, let me just tell you, it's incredibly freeing right now to be in a place where I don't really have a ton of liquid assets. But if my car breaks down as it did a few weeks ago, twice in 1 week, I can actually pay for it. All right, I'm not sitting on pins and needles. Now, it's not like I have a ton of extra sitting around, but here's the interesting thing. Big idea number two. The more we have, the more we think we need. It's really interesting. The more we have, the more it actually becomes that golden calf, that God for us, and we find ourselves in bondage to it. Actually treating our savings account or our credit capacity as a God. Now, one of the questions that this raises, you know, for me, probably for some of us, is, you know, how does God feel about nice things? And, you know, that's a reasonable question. And I was looking at this passage, I was thinking about this, I'm like, wait a minute. These people were slaves. I mean, slaves aren't supposed to have nice things, right? I mean, the whole point of slavery is that you don't have stuff. The whole point of slavery is that you have no choice. I mean, how did these slaves get all of this nice jewelry? Well, let's take a look back at where it came from in Exodus 3. This is back before the Israelites left Egypt. Here's what it says in Exodus 3. It says, and I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters, and so you will plunder the Egyptians. So, I mean, God is basically saying to them right here, hey, I want you to have nice things. In fact, so much so, when you get ready to leave Egypt, I want you to take some of the wealth out of Egypt. I want you to take earrings, take some of the bracelets, you know, that nice Rolex watch, I don't know, a Gucci bag or two, I mean, whatever it is. You can obviously have nice things because God gave you nice things. The question that we really have to wrestle with is whether our nice things have us. Right, the question we have to wrestle through is, you know, it's not bad to have money, but does my money actually own me? Do my toys, do my possessions, do my cars, do the things that I have actually own me? See, God wants us to be consumed with him, not with this ever, you know, constant pursuing of other things and needing the next big hit to fulfill the buzz. In Exodus 32, God sees these people, you know, creating this golden calf, and he gets really upset with them. In fact, you know what he calls them? He calls them stiff-necked people. Moses is hanging out with God up in the mountain, and he's getting the laws, and God looks down. He's like, Moses, you better get down there with your people. Look at what they're doing down there. He said, it's like they forgot that I was the God that brought them out of Egypt. They're down there making a God. I mean, I'm the God that loved on them, and here they are making a God. In a moment, they've turned and made a God for themselves out of physical things. He's like, Moses, get down there to these stiff-necked people, and here's what it says. It says, when Aaron saw this, again, Aaron is Moses' understudy. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord. And so Aaron is actually now calling this calf a god. I mean, Aaron has forgotten that it was actually the God of creation that delivered them out of slavery. But now he's saying, right here, we're going to worship this golden image and have a festival. I mean, it's crazy right here. See, here's what's happening. Third big idea, unfettered consumption brings bondage. Unfettered consumption leads to bondage. See, when you don't at least think through whether or not your stuff has you or not, you know, when you just kind of go with the flow, and it's going to create bondage. I mean, when you find yourself in a place of saying, well, I mean, I guess God gave this to me. I mean, it must be a good thing. And so it's good. It's healthy. So I'm just going to let my whole life revolve around it right here. Listen, when we begin to make the things or the stuff in our lives God, this is a very, very slippery slope. And so when God sees this, you know, Moses comes down, and here's what he does. It says he took the calf the people had made and burned it in the fire, and then he ground it into powder, scattered it in the water, and get this, he made the Israelites drink it. He made them drink it. This is crazy. Now, this is interesting because I recently learned that one of the great treatments, you probably knew this already, one of the greatest treatments for arthritis is drinking gold dust. Did you know that? Very fascinating. I just read this the other day. And I think it's interesting that God actually calls these people stiff-necked. All right, he actually makes them drink their stuff. All of their gold, he fires it, purifies it, grinds it down, puts it in their water, makes them drink it. And it's as if he's saying, hey, you guys have spiritual arthritis. You're stiff necked. Drink some of your possessions right here. See, here's the other thing that's interesting about this. See, everything you and I consume, you know, everything you and I consume eventually, whether it's good or bad, is going to either end up in a landfill or it's going to end up in a sewer pipe. Have you ever thought about that? I mean, everything we think we have to have. I mean, the Israelites, this very thing, all of their possessions, think about what happens to them. They grind them down, put them in the water, they drink it. 16 hours later, they're peeing and pooing it out. All right? I mean, the stuff that was so important to them is in a sewer pipe. And we're the same way, right? I mean, think about the things you've had to have. I remember 4 years ago, I didn't jump on board real early with the iPhone. I waited like 2 years, you know, after it came out. It came out six years ago, iPhone 3 came out. You know, and man, we had to have it, right? I mean, 4 years ago, I got the iPhone 3. You know where my iPhone 3 is right now? It's sitting in the bottom of my kid's toy box, right? I mean, I had to have it. I mean, I paid for like 2 years on this thing, and it sits on the bottom of my kid's toy box. I mean, remember that stereo you had to have, or that, you know, that DVD player? I mean, you know, where is it now? It's probably under four layers in the landfill or being sold for 50 cents in a garage sale, right? I mean, everything we consume, it either ends up in the landfill or it ends up in a sewer line. You know, what's fascinating is, here's what I've been discovering. I've been discovering that I, too, am an addict. Hi, my name's Kurt. Yeah, there's the AA in the group right there. Hey, my name's Kurt. I mean, that's, you know, or the whoever's, you know, been through a treatment process. You know, I'm addicted to my stuff. Let me tell you how addicted I am. A couple things have happened, even in the last 2-3 weeks. So about 3 weeks ago, Julie and I were out. We were out on a date, and our kids were with a sitter, and You know, and I've been at Sam's Club a couple times during the week. And have you ever noticed how they always put the TVs right inside the front door? And so I'm going in, I'm thinking, man, I really would like a new, you know, panel TV. One of the reasons I wanted a new panel TV is just because we just spent $79 on a Apple TV. And so the logical thing to do then is to buy like a $500 new TV to go with the $79 Apple TV, right? I mean, I need a new one of these. So we're out, and I'm like, Julie, I know you haven't been in Sam's. Let's stop by. Let me show you a couple of these TVs. And so, you know, we're walking through, and she's just kind of looking, and, you know, and I've known. I mean, every time I'm in there, it's like I know that there are other things I need to be doing financially. And I just have kind of had this sense that right now, buying a new TV, another TV, is not really what I should be doing with my finances. But man, I would love to get a new panel TV to go with my Apple TV. You know, and every time I go into Sam's Club, I am just tempted. I mean, it's like a kid in a candy store. Right about that same time, it was about 2 weeks ago then, two different times during the week, my car broke down. My Expedition, a Ford Expedition, 14-year-old Ford Expedition. Love my car. You know, I feel like I'm a beast on the road. And I drive this thing. It's almost got 200,000 miles on it. And two different times, it was in the shop. And so, you know, it was very frustrating. I mean, I'm having to take Julie to work every day, and we're picking each other up. And so, you know, at some point on our way home from picking her up one day, she said to me, she said, you know, Kurt, maybe it's time to look for a new car. Let me tell you what, you might as well put a stripper on a pole for me right there, all right? I mean, I was like, oh, my, you're asking me to look for a new car? I mean, you put a stripper on a pole, I will do things and think about things that are not good and will not land me in a, I mean, my eyes were bugging out of my face. I get to look for, I mean, I spent the next week 4 to 5 hours a day looking for a new car. I'm online. I'm looking at all these online. You know, I need this. I need that. Hey, Julie, guess what we could buy? I think we could. I mean, I was fixated simply by a suggestion. And I'm like, man, I am addicted. My name's Kurt. I'm an addict. I mean, I'm an addict. And some of this goes back to my childhood. You know, I was thinking about some of my earliest, you know, memories about money. And when I was a kid, and you know, it seemed as a kid, I don't know if you felt this way or not, but it seemed as a kid that everybody else always had the coolest toys. I don't know if you felt that way or not, but and I don't know if it was true or not, but I felt that way. And I felt like I never had the coolest toys. And my hope of getting a good toy was always a birthday or Christmas. And yet Christmas, you know, was kind of a bummer time for me because, you know, sometimes my parents would try to kill two birds with one stone. You know, they try to help themselves financially and also be a blessing to me. So I'd go into my stocking and I'd have like deodorant and I'd be like, oh, great. You know, Merry Christmas, Kurt. And, you know, or, you know, I'd have something soft and squishy and, you know, I'd open it up as a pair, you know, a bag of underwear, you know, for the next year. And I'm like, oh, awesome. You know, and listen, my parents were great, all right? And they were very good financially. In fact, I wish I had I wish I would have taken more of their financial sense when I left the house. But for me, you know, when other kids were always getting the Evel Knievel Racer. I remember the Evel Knievel Racer, guys. I mean, man, that was like my dream motorcycle right there. And it always took a lot longer for me to get the cool things. So when I was 18 and I had the ability to go out and get my own credit card, I was at a Pacer game, and Citibank was there, and they came up, and you know, they're like, hey, sign up today. You know, we're going to give you plastic power, and get this, and a free T-shirt. I'm like, a free T-shirt? Man, sign me up. I want it now. Plastic power is mine. You know, and so I sign up for this thing, and listen, a lot of the stuff I put on that credit card got flushed down the toilet. I mean, I ate way more Pizza King. I should have been eating ramen noodles. I was eating Pizza King all the time. You know, I mean, I lived with 21% interest for years and years and years, and I got a $10 T-shirt out of it. I mean, it was cool. You know, and the T-shirt's in a landfill somewhere now. And it wasn't just the credit cards. This was also at a time where they had these things called payment books. I don't know if you remember payment books. But, you know, I had a payment book. Like, I got a new car, and I got a payment book. And I got a, you know, TV, and I got a payment book. And, you know, student loans came in, and guess what I got? A payment book. And then I met Julie, and Julie and I got married, and guess what Julie had? Payment books. All right, I mean, she had payment books too, and so you know what we did? We actually went through some debt consolidation. We took all of our debt and consolidated it into one marriage. Woof. All her debt, all my debt, all into one marriage. And listen, we had a drawer in our desk, and it was the top drawer, and it was just overflowing with payment books. And I hated going to that drawer. In fact, I hated going to the mailbox because I got the statements about the payment books. And what was fascinating was at the same time, Julie and I now started our kind of our married life. We're endeavoring to be generous and do something called tithing, to give back a minimum of 10% of what we made to, you know, the church to fund and fuel the life change that God was doing through our church. And it was interesting because this is a principle that I'd grown up with. My mom and dad had trained me in this as a kid. I remember, you know, going to church as a kid, and my dad would always hand me this little envelope that had a little dime in the corner of it, right? I mean, I got a dollar, so I put a dime in the corner of the envelope, and I'd take it in, and I the offering plate in church would come by, and I'd drop it in there. I hated sitting in church. I mean, that's one of the reasons we want to have cool kids environments here, because I used to sit in seats like this every week and I hated it. It was a disconnect. I actually got trained to not like church because of that, because none of this connects with kids as much as you think it might. And so, you know, so I'd put my dime in there and I'd sit there the rest of the time. And then one day, the church got a raise. I mean, my dad gave me an extra nickel to put in there. So I now had 15 cents and, you know, and I was putting that in. And then as adults, you know, we're saying, well, we want to be generous, but man, we've got this drawer full of payment books. And sometimes we think, well, man, I want to be generous too. And God, I'll be generous, you know, once I make. I mean, if I just had a little bit more, then I'll really practice generosity. You know what? You know what's wrong with that statement? Is it never works. Tell you what, it was a lot easier to give a dime off a dollar than it is to give 10% off my salary today. I mean, it just is. It's a hard thing. And the point for me that was kind of the life change moment where it really hit home was when I was sitting in a conference a few years ago. And this was right before Julie and I kind of got on this journey where we kind of began to tackle our debt and address our consumption. And I was in this conference and they were closing and somebody was praying. And I remember just sitting there and the person praying was saying things like, God, we are disturbed that there are kids in our community that are going to bed hungry tonight. God, we are disturbed that there are kids in our community who have nowhere to call a bed this evening. God, we're disturbed that the foster care system is broken in our city. God, we're disturbed that there are young girls hanging out under overpasses and they're being picked up by, you know, the sex slave, you know, pimps, and they're being sold off into the sex slave industry. And I'm listening to this and I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking to myself, I'm not disturbed. I'm not disturbed at all. You know what I'm disturbed by? I'm disturbed that I got a drawer full of payment books. I'm disturbed that I feel like I should have got a raise 6 months ago. And man, when's my next raise coming? I mean, doesn't anybody notice how hard I'm working? I mean, I'm disturbed that I can barely make ends meet with all of the obligations I've taken on. And then you know what happens? I'm actually disturbed that I'm not disturbed. Have you ever been there where you're disturbed that you're actually not bothered because I was so focused on how can I make more money more quickly that I actually wasn't disturbed? And I just kind of broke down in that moment right there. And it was a proper humiliation. I mean, God just really convicted me right there. And he said, Kurt, you know, you've got to get some things in order. You are way too attached to all of this stuff that is driving your life. Here's the thing. There is no place on the face of America that you can go to deal with this issue except a place like this. It's the only place that'll help you with this issue. All right, America didn't help me with my addiction. You know what America wants me to do? America wants me to keep America rolling. That's my job, right? Keep America rolling. Man, I get a tax refund. What am I supposed to do it? Go out and spend it. Keep America. Pour it right back in. Listen, if you have a heroin addiction, if you have a sex addiction, if you have an alcohol addiction, if you have any kind of addiction, there are Christians and Buddhists and atheists and Muslims that will help you get out of that addiction. They'll help you get out of any addiction except an addiction to materialism. The only place that can help you get out of an addiction to materialism, this place right here. And if there's one area that I think God really wants to form us spiritually, it's in how we view our stuff and getting a handle of whether I own my stuff or my stuff owns me. And I think God actually wants to bless us in this area as well. You know, a few years ago, Julie and I were in Haiti. And we were traveling around and we were, you know, seeing different churches and I was blown away. We'd go into these little huts of people that had basically nothing. I mean, they were living off like $50 a day. I mean, they had virtually nothing. And yet, what also blew me away is they had a spiritual fervor like I had never seen before. I mean, they had a dependence on God like I had never personally experienced. I was blown away by this, you know. And so as I thought about this, I thought, you know, we need a breaking here this morning. In fact, we need a break. And, you know, there's a spiritual realm that's going on. And I believe that there's a spiritual realm that actually tries to keep us in bondage to our stuff. There's a spiritual realm that actually tries to keep us from breaking free from our attachment, that tries to keep us from being generous. And I just think we need a breaking from that. And over this series, we're going to give a lot of financial tips. We're going to give you some really cool stuff that will help you process through what that looks like for you. But I think first, there has to be a breaking. You know, maybe you've seen before, maybe you have one of these pictures in your home where you get a picture of a kid who, you know, basically you can sponsor for $30 a month, right? You can send them some money overseas and you can pay for their food and their education and their medical bills for a whole month. And you take that commitment on and, you know, you hang their picture on your refrigerator because, you know, we're the haves and they're the have-nots. Well, here's what we're going to do. The reason you got your picture taken this morning, and hopefully you got your picture taken. If you didn't get this taken, you can get this taken in the comments after service today. We're gonna send our pictures to people on the other side of the world who have nothing physically. You know, we're blessed. I mean, we're the haves, they're the have-nots, but let me tell you what, they have something spiritually that you and I don't have. We're in a spiritual deficit compared to what they have. And so we're gonna send our photos to them and ask them to put our pictures on the side of their huts. And we're going to ask them to pray for us every day. Visually, they're going to look at your face, and they're going to look at your name, and they're going to pray physically that you would have a breaking and that you would begin to be broken away from your addiction to your stuff. And if you want to do this morning, here's what you do. You take a pen, and you just take a pen and write your names on the bottom of this photo. Right across the bottom, just put your first name, last name, whatever you want to do. And if you want someone on the other side of the world who has virtually nothing but has a spiritual fervor that's unmatched, like anything you've probably ever seen, and you say, God, I want to be consumed by the things that consume you, then just write your name on here, and then we're going to have you turn these in at the end of the service. In fact, with your connection cards and any offerings you've brought, you can take your picture, and you can put them in the things next to the doors, the joy boxes. Yeah, you weren't expecting that. And you can place it in there, and these are going to be airmailed to the other side of the world within the next 7 days, and people are going to begin to pray for you that you would have a breaking. And so we're going to sing. We're actually going to sing our prayer this morning. So go ahead and stand with me. And we're going to ask God, even in this moment, to begin that breaking process. Because I believe God just wants to do some super ordinary things in our lives. And let me just say something else. You know, if you're feeling shame here this morning, like, man, I have so much shame for the debt I carry or the way I manage money. Listen, I want you to know that is not from God. God is not a God of shame. He's actually a God of freedom. God actually is your cheerleader wanting to champion you as you begin to break free from your stuff. And so, you know, this is one of those places where this isn't where God wants something from you. This is where God wants something for you. He wants freedom. So we're gonna pray to words here on the screens, and we're going to invite this breaking to come. Let's do that.